Welcome to another edition of The Spirit Revolution. My name is Philip Coppin.
My name is Kathleen McGowan.
And today we tackle the subject of reincarnation. Reincarnation, when we decided on that subject a few days ago, it just so happened that at the same time there was a coincidence, so maybe we should do a show about synchronicity next week, tackling the fact that reincarnation, and specifically the interest in reincarnation in the Western world, is once again on the rise. Obviously, in the 1960s, when there was an awful lot of influence coming from India, reincarnation became an extremely popular subject in the West. And it inspired some researchers, specifically doctors, to begin looking into the question whether reincarnation was just something which religion dealt with, or whether it was actually possible a fact which could be proven in a scientific way. And ever since, topics like near-death experiences and reincarnations have come up, and more prominently, more and more. And we will be discussing some of the leading lights, some of the parts these doctors have taken in trying to prove the existence of reincarnation. But reincarnation is indeed something which seems to be against everything Christianity teaches. And of course, when you hear the topics discussed in Kathleen's books, you will find that Kathleen has got a slightly different perspective on that. So Kathleen, reincarnation and Christianity.
Yes. I don't even know where to start because it's such a great subject. First of all, I did want to say August 27th, New York Times did a very large feature on reincarnation. And we had already decided to do this show on reincarnation, and then that came up. So there you go with the synchronicity. What I was fascinated by in terms of the New York Times piece, it's a very nice piece. It's one of those pieces where they let the skeptics air their criticisms, but they don't let them have the last word, which is refreshing and something that you don't see very often. Usually in mainstream media, when you're dealing with a subject like reincarnation or anything that is spiritual or, God forbid, New Agey, the critics are always going to have the last word. I mean, that's certainly been my experience in the media now, hasn't it? So it was lovely to see. It was quite a beautiful article. It was an article about love and about, you know, these people who feel like they have been in love before. But what I found most fascinating about it was that people in this country and perhaps throughout the Western world are really finding a renewed and invigorated interest in this idea of reincarnation. So I think there's an interesting aspect of why is that happening now? And I definitely want to come back to that idea during the show because I think it's important. I think it speaks to everything that's happening right now in this resurgence and then opening of consciousness as we approach this shift in 2012, whatever that shift may be and how it may manifest. I think it's a shift in consciousness, and I think this renewed passion for reincarnation, and for some people, a newly discovered passion for the idea of reincarnation, is extremely interesting and extremely exciting. But to answer your original question, are reincarnation beliefs and Christianity mutually exclusive? Well, I think anyone coming from a fundamentalist perspective would, of course, say, absolutely, this is an Eastern philosophy, this has nothing to do with Christianity, to which I say, I disagree. And I disagree not from the point of view of, you know how I feel, everyone who's ever listened to me or read me at any length knows that I am not a fan or supporter of the Jesus in India or Jesus as Buddhist or Jesus as any of those things. I don't believe Jesus ever went to India. I don't believe he studied Indian philosophy. However, I believe that basic truths are basic truths, and Jesus was a seeker and teacher of the truth. There's some very interesting things in Christianity that lead towards this idea that Jesus himself believed in or subscribed to this idea of we have been here before and we will be here again. I started looking into it when I came across over and over again this idea, this catchphrase throughout heretical Christianity, which I write about in my books, and that phrase is the time returns. So if we're talking about the time returns, are we in fact talking about reincarnation? And there are a couple of really great books that I discovered out there. There's one called Did Jesus Teach Reincarnation? And forgive me because the author's name escapes me at the moment. So we will put it up on the website so that people can look for it. Really excellent book about all the different places in the gospel that potentially back up the idea that Jesus actually was teaching reincarnation. But I think the most interesting And the one that can be debated on both sides is there is an idea throughout the New Testament that both John the Baptist and Jesus are the reincarnation of earlier prophets. Now, the critics will say, oh, no, they're not saying that John is the incarnation of Isaiah, and they're not saying that Jesus is the reincarnation of Adam. They are saying instead that they're in the model of, in the mode of, in the idea of. But when you look at the way it's actually written and the phrasing, I think that there is some argument to be made there. There's also some very, very interesting information in the Gnostic Gospels that back up this idea of we have been here before, we come back to do the jobs that we're here to do and the jobs that we're given by God, and those jobs tend to be the same over and over and over again in incarnation, and that we come back in order to do those. So there's been some really fascinating, I think, analysis of this idea that reincarnation and Christianity are essentially very harmonious. That said, now, it also, you have to look at what the broader based idea of reincarnation is. A perspective that we can transmogrify and come back as an ant or as a cow or as anything like that is certainly outside of the realm of what I believe Jesus might have believed or been teaching. But the idea that the human spirit and the human soul is eternal and can find itself in different bodies time and time again, I think has a really sound foundation in spiritual teachings and is not contradictory to Christianity.
And that's definitely what I think is one of the great spiritual teachings of Hermetica, definitely has an entire treatise on this water of memory. And the story goes like this, that when we incarnate, we are drinking from the waters of memory to forget. And some of us imbibe more than others because some are felt that they should be detached from previous lives more so than others. And then it is a challenge, so to speak, that within the body, during a lifetime, one can once again drink from the waters of memory and remember these past lives, and then to become fully remembered within the body. And when you read this Hermetic material, some of it which has made it into the Grail literature as well, you also see parallels to the sense of mission, the sense that we come here. And also the Hermetic teachings make it extremely clear that man is different from the animals, that animals do not have this reincarnation thing, that the soul is something which attaches to a human body in a very symbiotic way, but that it is a relationship with the body, and that upon death this bond is broken, and that the soul then goes on to different bodies or different missions, whatever it has done on life. So we're kind of saying that the 1960s is when this entered Western frame once again. In the 1970s, people like Dr. Raymond Moody began to do research into the near-death experiences and whether something survived the physical death of the body. And then he and various other doctors began to move into the notion whether or not this was tied in with reincarnation. One of the most prominent researchers and one of the most stunning people I'd never met, but I saw his documentaries and some of his writings, was Dr. Ian Stevenson. And Dr. Ian Stevenson is not one of those people who ever wrote the bestseller, but I remember more than a decade ago when I think it was the BBC did a documentary on him. And Dr. Stevenson went to India, where obviously there is a culture where children are allowed to speak about reincarnation because it's part of their culture. Here, if children speak about their previous lives as an adult, and I've seen this and experienced this personally, parents do not know what to do. So when in the India you either nurture or allow this, it obviously creates for a different environment. And Dr. Stevenson went there and he documented 2,000 cases. Now, one of the criticisms to do with reincarnation is a lot of the use of hypnosis, that somehow adults are hypnotized and then under hypnosis their mind releases this information, which the skeptics then say, well, how can we prove this is right? And isn't hypnosis just some kind of like, some parlor trick? And how can there be any validity attitudes. Well, Dr. Stevenson didn't do anything of the kind, and there's one story amongst several which Stevenson came back with, which I think is so beautiful and so telling. And this was of a very young boy, 4, 5, or 6, and just from his behavior, you could see in this very young body soul, in this very young body, there was a very old soul. And from the very moment he could talk, he was telling his mum that he was an adult, that he was in his 40s, that he had been shot, that he had a wife, that he had children. And apart from driving his parents mad, at some point, they actually felt that they should stop this. So they began to research to kind of like hope that their answer would be that little son was making it all up. And somewhere along the line, Dr. Stevenson became involved as well. And where the television documentary picks it up is the fact that they have identified that the little boy is saying, I am this person, I lived in this place. And together with the help of Dr. Stevenson, they're going to go to the hometown where he said he came from with his parents and driving around. And he gives like a walking commentary. Now, the beautiful thing was that Stevenson decided that when he was going to, he wanted to meet his children. He wanted to meet his wife, and he wanted to meet his children. And to identify the children, Stevenson had come up with the fact that these children should be, I've forgotten how many, but let's say there were 4, should be within a group of about 14. So it would be a test for this small child to pick out the correct children, which were his. And obviously he completed the task without any problem. And then there was actually a moment whereby the young child wanted to have some time alone with his wife of a previous lifetime to kind of like settle this entire matter, whereby he kind of like he felt that he could never say properly goodbye to her because he was shot. And also the interesting thing was that this boy had a mark on his body where he had been shot, which, you know, obviously science had never been able to explain. And this was quite a big one. This wasn't just a little mark. This was quite a substantial mark. So this is just one example of hundreds out of 2,000 cases which Stevenson has mapped and logged. And unfortunately, Dr. Ian Stevenson is dead, but his work is being carried out, or continued, rather. So you have been involved with the hypnotherapy sessions on adults. And what is your perspective on people who, as an adult, specifically in Western society, want to find out about reincarnation and about whom they were in their past life, knowing that they were probably not Pharaoh Ramses II, Cleopatra, or Marie Antoinette?
Or Anne Boleyn or Joan of Arc, or because I've met many. I've met many Anne Boleyns, or as I'm fond of saying, many lives, many Magdalens, because I've met hundreds of Mary Magdalens as well. And we're going to talk about that, because whereas I am an absolute believer and advocate in understanding reincarnation and also understanding how our past lives affect our present circumstances, our, you know, our much of, I think, of our decision-making and our challenges can come from or be affected by past lives. I think most of our relationships are affected by past life information. And in 1991, I became a certified hypnotherapist. I went to the Hypnosis Motivation Institute here in Southern California, and I have conducted hundreds of past life regressions. That said, I have heavy skepticism about certain aspects of regressive hypnosis and past life therapy. At the same time, I also think it can be the single most valuable tool for therapy in the world. I think it's just something that has to be approached the right way and with a certain amount of caution, but also with a certain amount of lack of ego, shall we say. Okay, let me back up here for a minute. I became a certified hypnotherapist in 1991 after having some extraordinary experiences with past life regression myself. The experiences I had was going through, when I went through a particularly difficult time in my early 20s, I went to a fantastic hypnotherapist here in Southern California named Jason Levine, and I don't know if he's still practicing or not, but if he is, he's phenomenal. And he really, really helped me through it. And that's how I got involved with past life regression. And when he regressed me, I was not anybody famous in this particular regression. What he regressed me to was a very, very simple lifetime, but there was a lesson in what I saw about myself that was extremely impactful on how I was feeling at the time and why something was hurting me so much more than it probably should have been. And so it gave me tremendous clarity. I became very fascinated. Now, to back up a little bit, a few years earlier, my mother had given me as a gift a book by an author named Dick Sutphin, who some of you listening to this show are probably familiar with. Fantastic man, wonderful teacher. And before Brian Weiss became the king of the past life market, and I'm a big Brian Weiss fan, so let me just throw that out there. I think he's done phenomenal things for the understanding of past life work. But before Brian Weiss, there was Dick Sutphin. And Dick Sutphin wrote a book, which for me is one of the great all-time classics of spirituality, a book called You Were Born Again to Be Together. And this book is a series of case studies of people who were in loving relationships or difficult relationships, and through past life regression had discovered where they had been together before, and that they were, in fact, born again to be together, to either work out issues from the past and fix that karma, and also to move forward into something bigger, brighter, and more beautiful. So I had this foundation of having read Dick's books, having been extremely affected by them as a teenager, and then having this past life experience myself. And it was then that I decided a few years later that I wanted to really get more deeply involved in it and learn the process myself. I wanted to understand hypnotherapy. I wanted to become a therapist. Now, what I will say is a lot of the critics, for example, the critics of Brian Weiss's work, sort of even, you know, all the way down from the other psychiatrists to, you know, the basic haters online who love to talk about things that they don't know anything about, they tend to say the same thing when criticizing the hypnotherapy process. And the criticism tends to be that what happens in hypnotherapy is a product of the mind and is no different than the dream state. And is that possibly true? At times, I think sometimes it could be true. But there are so many cases, and I'm not talking about a handful. I'm not talking about aberrations. I'm talking about hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of cases where the person in hypnosis has awareness and understanding and complete and thorough knowledge of something that they could not have known otherwise. This information is inside of them and affecting them in some way that is extraordinary. And this is where I think you have to really start paying attention. I mean, the reason we originally decided we were going to do this show this week is because we saw a YouTube video of an amazing 11-year-old boy who was born with past life memory from of being in World War II. And again, we'll put the link on our page to this kid. Incredible story covered by a number of news stations across America. Really beautiful story. And this kid's understanding of where he was and who he was, down to the names of the people, he could identify people in photographs. He talked to the woman who was his sister, asked her where things were that had come from their mother. I mean, really extraordinary stuff. Stuff that this kid could not possibly have made up. And yet when you read the comments online, it's like, oh, well, this kid was in a World War II airplane museum once, so that's probably how he knows this. Well, you know, that's kind of typical skeptic stuff. It's like, you know, maybe he was, but it wouldn't have told him what this guy's sister's name was and where the portrait was that her mother painted of him and why it was in the attic and, you know, all of these incredible details.
And, of course, we know from within our own circle of friends, a child which isn't raised with television and at some point early on in his childhood just begins to talk about the Titanic in extraordinary detail, saying he was an engineer on the Titanic and driving his father next to insane by giving certain details and arguing to the point, no, I am right, and the father just treating his child as any dad would treat his child, of like, you don't know anything about the Titanic, therefore you can't possibly be right. Yet the child was right.
Yeah. this child was right, and he was right. He had extraordinary information about the Titanic. And we're talking about a 7-year-old here. And he's been talking about the Titanic since he was about 4 or 5. And I mean obsessively. He has pictures of it. He has models of it. This kid is obsessed with the Titanic. And this is a child who comes from a Waldorf education, a Rudolf Steiner environment, who is not exposed to television. So where did this come from? He certainly didn't see it on TV. This is not someone who was sitting in front of the Discovery Channel. And he would just come out with things to his and say to his dad, but I know it was this size, and I know it was built this way. And his dad started doing the investigation. Every time his son talked to him about the Titanic, he would start looking at it, and every single time he was dead on. I mean, really, really extraordinary stuff. I did a project back in 1993 when I was doing a lot of hypnotic regressions. I became very, very interested in the idea of Atlantis. And one of the reasons I became a hypnotherapist in 1991 was because I've always been fascinated by the Atlantis story and the Atlantis legend. And I thought, gosh, how great would it be if we could regress people to Atlantean lifetimes and get real information, you know, so much so that we could actually identify where it actually is and what's left of it and, you know, and all of those things. You know, Atlantean sailors who could find it by the stars, you know, whatever, you know, information we could come up with. And so I did a project. I started a project in 1993 where I began to do what was called a directed regression. So, for example, if I'm going to regress you back to a past life, usually what would happen is I wouldn't direct it. I would just have you go back, do the regression, put you in hypnosis, and then have you tell me what you see, and we go from there and see what comes up. But you can do a directed regression, which is you can tell someone if you were alive during this period of time, if you have any memory in your consciousness, unconsciousness, subconsciousness, spirit, soul, wherever this memory lies, of this place, access it now. So a directed regression in this case was, if you were alive during the period of, you know, the high period of Atlantis, the golden age of Atlantis, go there now and tell me what you see. And I did this, I probably did about 25 cases at this stage, but here was the extraordinary thing. I was working in Los Angeles. There are millions of people in this city. I had access to all different kinds of people. I regressed a number of people who did not know each other, who did not know me prior to this this meeting. And here's the thing that was amazing. As I began to regress these people and they talked about their Atlantean experiences, they remembered each other. So I, at one point, regressed one woman who talked about being the teacher of the horses. She used horses to teach kids, and there was a temple that had horses in it, and she told this very elaborate story about her work with the horses. 2 weeks later, I regressed someone who talked about her horse teacher and being one of these children in the horse temple, and even identified the other person by name, the same name that woman had given me as her Atlantean name. These people did not know each other and had no connection. And this happened not once or twice, but over and over again. The descriptions of locations were identical. I mean, down to this column looks this way, it's this color, it's set here, there's a doorway on the left of this temple. You know, we go to this temple on this day, we do this. Here's, I mean, it was really incredible stuff. You know, I've been threatening for a long time to do something with the Atlantean material that, you know, it's been sitting, you know, in drawers and in my head for 17 years. But for me, you know, it was the single most fascinating study on reincarnation I've ever done, because when people can begin to identify each other who don't know each other in this time frame, something's going on there. Now, we can ask ourselves other questions. Is it something other than past life memory? Are we accessing something else? Are we accessing a genetic memory? Is there something in our DNA that is helping us to remember? Are we accessing the collective unconscious? A lot of people, when I talk about this, talk to me about the Akashic records. You know, is there some great, you know, spiritual record store out there that we can tap into and get this information? I just try to be open-minded, because the fact is, I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and tell anyone I know the truth. I know the answer. I know it's just, I don't know. I just know that it's real. I just know that something extraordinary happens when you dig into this work. And I also know that there is a reason that traditional therapists and traditional psychiatrists don't like this work.
Well, when you're saying about how, as while you were doing hypnotherapy and all of these people began to have like shared memories of Atlantis, it's very similar to a person who has written about it, Dr. Arthur Gurdon, whereby his people who he found or who he ended up working with all began to identify a specific previous life, memories of a previous life to do with Catharism, whereby they all had this shared bond and that somehow they had incarnated in this thing, in this present lifetime. And definitely it brings back the subject of the spirit family, the soul family, the theories to do with reincarnation, that it's not just the individual souls which are trying to reconnect over past life, over various lifetimes, but also the spirit family, the soul family, the various souls which you have identified with at a moment in time, maybe, you know, hundreds of whatever incarnations ago, maybe thousands of years ago, but that you incarnate as part of this cluster of groups to have shared experiences, and that within that group you will go in search of your other half, your twin soul, to use that wording. Now, some doctors have obviously gone down that road, and just going off on a slight tangent, but to illustrate this, one of the statistics, and I might have mentioned it before, is that when a loved one dies, in 60% of the cases, the surviving partner will have some kind of experience which is anomalous, which is real to him or her, of that other person having survived death. Sometimes it's hearing a voice, sometimes it's a coincidence which is so unique that, you know, it cannot be anything but like a sign. But in most of these cases, and of, you know, 60% of people have this, but in most of the cases, people do not report it because they fear that their children or family members will think daddy or mummy has gone off the deep end and cannot cope with the death of their loved one. So they shut down. And it ties it once again to this between Western world and the Indian world, where in the Indian world children are allowed to talk about it, and parents are probably more easy to remember and maybe even note down what these children at a very young age are saying. Definitely, it's a trend. We've given a few examples already of children in the Western world who talk about this. The YouTube video is another such example. There's time and time again cases of children having these experiences. Last year, I organized together with a group of Dutch researchers a symposium called Frontier Symposium, and it was a very telling event whereby, as an adult male, under hypnotherapy, he had remembered previous lives, specifically one as a war pilot in the Second World War. Now, fortunately, he had the name he remembered was very unique because, as we know, thousands and thousands, millions of people died within the Second World War. He used this name. He went into the records and was able to trace down who he believed he had been. And he made contact with his former family, and the only surviving member of his family was his sister. What happened was he himself is Dutch, so we didn't have far to go. But we also invited his former sister and her daughter to come to Amsterdam. And so what we had was an account of what happened of this reunion. And first of all, it was beautiful to see how he was married, but how his family and his previous family had completely gelled. And how everybody was so comfortable with this, because he and his former sister were so, you know, when you saw them together, which you didn't really see on stage that much because obviously there was the pressure to perform within a certain, i.e. 45-minute time frame and get their story out. But afterwards, when you sat down with them and you saw them sitting next to each other, you could see that this was a brother and a sister, even though the brother, you know, had could be her grandson almost. But also he had very specific memories whereby he said, like, when he visited her in the house she still lived in at the moment of his death, he remembered certain details, very simple things like, oh, this is where the bike hung. Oh, this thing really isn't as good looking as it was 45 years ago. Oh, this thing has changed since that moment in time. Very specific details which convinced his sister absolutely of the fact that this was not just some imposter, some weird guy from Holland who had flown in to kind of like make a ludicrous story and sell it. So very... A very simple story, done without real kind of, you know, this isn't a doctor driving it, this isn't something driving it. This is just people reconnecting over lifetimes and happening as an adult. But I think a lot of information is lost because in the Western world, we do suppress it as a child. And the New York Times article was very interesting in that it mentioned Julia Roberts, who with Eat, Pray, Love kind of was profiled as against the Kardashians as to why she shies away from things. And what the New York Times did was actually lift some of the veil, because Julia is convinced that her child is a reincarnated soul, reincarnated being, and that in her discussions with her child, she sees this as she sees the evidence for the fact that this is, you know, not just an illusion but a fact. So where are we in, I mean, this is tying it back to the New York Times article. It's clear that there is a resurgence. It's clear that certain families in the West are open to this. It's clear that in the case of our friends, the dad is almost bullied, if not pushed into accepting the fact that there is more to life than just one life. Where does this leave us in the West? And how, as a hypnotherapist and a mother, how would you deal with this in a day-to-day situation?
Well, I mean, I think especially with children, that you have to just let them be free and be open and talk about it and not shut them down, and which I think is sort of the knee-jerk reaction for a lot of parents. You know, I think that there is a definite need for conscious parenting right now. We're certainly aware of the fact that there are a lot of kids on this earth right now. We've got a few that live in this house who are really special and have some extraordinary gifts and potentially some extraordinary memories. My oldest son, who is going to be 21 this year, when he was about 3, sitting in his car seat as we were driving home from his babysitter, started talking to me about Judas one day and telling me all about Judas and how people were wrong about him and they didn't understand and who he was. And I have no idea where that came from, because at the time I was not immersed in the kind of work that I'm immersed in now. And I think in some ways he's one of the reasons I am immersed in it. You know, I want to talk about... one thing I want to say about this, a lot of people who are having these memories, your experience at the Frontier Symposium, this little boy who's been all over the news, we have friends, a friend of ours has a nephew who vividly remembers his World War II lifetime. There's a lot of World War II information coming out right now, a lot of people who are having very, very detailed World War II memories. And so one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is that because, you know, it's so important for us to remember exactly how terrible this war was. And is this a never again situation? Are people coming in with these memories and remembering what World War II was like to ensure that we never make those kinds of mistakes again? You know, is that what part of this is about? Or is it simply a matter of time? It's so recent in the memory. These people have been reborn so quickly that maybe they haven't drank enough of the waters of life as they talk about in the Hermeticum. What I want to talk about is the dark side of reincarnation work and the dark side of past lives for a minute, because it's something I've seen a lot of, and it's something that scares me. And I can't stand up and say, yes, we all need to go do past life work and we all need to embrace our past lives without putting a couple of caveats and some warnings out there. Past life work is extremely beneficial, healing, works incredibly fast. Do it with a, you know, if you're going to do this, if you're going to go out, there's a lot of people out there who are doing this kind of work. There are fantastic therapists out there. Find someone who's experienced. Find someone who you can talk to their previous clients. Get recommendations. You know, go to someone who really knows how to work with you in hypnosis if you're interested in your past lives. Now, very important. Do not let your ego get in the way of your therapy. And what I mean is this. You certainly can talk yourself into anything in hypnosis. And this is the danger. So when people say, well, people are making this up, is that possible? Yeah, it absolutely is possible. Now, what's fascinating is I have had people in hypnosis who will tell me what they see. And as they're talking to me, they say, you know, I don't know. I think I could be making this up. I'm still conscious. Because there's an idea that hypnosis is this, you know, stunned, unconscious, trance-like state. And it is for some people, but for others it isn't. Hypnosis can be something that is effective for people, but not very deep. I mean, I've had people in hypnosis who've had extraordinary experiences, but they're also still kind of cognizant of where they are and who they are. It's all about your control issues and how you intake information. So this idea of being entirely transed out and remembering nothing is not always accurate. There's a lot of different ways to experience hypnosis. And as a result, I think people can manipulate their experience depending on what it is. And by that, I mean, for example, I have regressed at least 10 Anne Boleyns. I have regressed a lot of people who claim to be somebody famous. In those circumstances, do I think that they are drawing on wishful thinking? You know, I don't mean it strictly from an ego point of view, but sometimes it could be, look, they've read a lot of books about Anne Boleyn. They feel really connected to Anne Boleyn. They feel really connected to Cleopatra. They feel really connected to Mary Magdalene, and therefore they manifest this as past lives. I have received literally hundreds of letters from people who are absolutely certain that they were Mary Magdalene. Absolutely. And I think that there is a danger here when our ego gets connected to identity. I think that past life work should not be about identity. It should never be, I was this person. It should always be, this is what I learn from understanding the past. I think the only way to go into past life work and this idea of reincarnation is to say, I want to learn about the past so I can live in the present. What does learning about the past, same thing with history. This is why I love history. What we learn from our past enriches us in the present and prepares us for the future. So, you know, that's the one thing that I beg of all of you. If you're going to go investigate your past lives, disconnect from the ego, disconnect from your need to be somebody famous. I'm not saying you weren't. Somebody had to be. Right? So, although I don't think anybody had to be Mary Magdalene, because I don't think that Ascended Masters need to reincarnate. I don't think that she's here. I don't think she needs to be here. But, you know, someone had to be Anne Boleyn, right? Somebody had to be Cleopatra. So you could be. But what I'm saying is, even if you were, it doesn't matter. It's not about the identity with that famous person. It's about what did I learn from that? Why does that person's life affect me today? And that's what I would say to people when I had them in regression and they'd say, gosh, I'm seeing something, but I don't know if I'm making it up, or if it's real. And I would say, just tell me what it is. Because if it's showing up in your subconscious during hypnosis, then it's something that your mind is trying to get out. It's something you need to learn from. So take the learning, take the information and run with it. Do something great with it. Be fulfilled by it or learn from it. But just don't get hung up on the identity stuff. The darker side of it is I've even had death threats from people who believe they were Salome and are not happy with the way I portray John the Baptist in my books. And I mean, it can become a very dark thing when you become too attached to this idea of personality. But when you can detach from that and just be all about the learning and the experience of what happened in that time frame that is still affecting you now or still has your attention in some way because there's something in your present that you can learn from, that is when it's so valuable. Now, the other piece of that really quick is that this is why traditional therapy and traditional psychiatry, traditional psychiatry tends to oppose this kind of treatment because this kind of treatment is very quick. You can cure, quote, cure somebody, heal somebody, sometimes in one session or in just a couple of sessions through this kind of deep hypnotic therapy, whereas using their conscious mind and without this kind of regression, they can be in psychiatry for 20 to 25 years. And that's what got Dr. Brian Weiss in trouble originally when he was the dean of psychiatry at Mount Sinai and then started talking about past life work. You know, it got him in very, very deep trouble with American psychiatrists.
Yes, and I mean, he is just one of several. There's a general trend. You know, Dr. Raymond Moody is a doctor. He personally begins to experience evidence of near-death experiences, comes out and says, this is real. Something is happening here. This is not just people making something up. Dr. John Mack, when he spoke out about UFO abductions, he said what these people are experiencing is not necessarily ET landing in their front garden and abducting them, but they are relating true events. This is something like they're relating to. This is not somebody who's making it up. And he was, again, a top psychiatrist, the founder of Harvard. Dr. Ian Stevenson, you know, it's got the doctor in front of it. Dr. Timothy Leary on a completely different subject matter, but once again, a leader in his field. Dr. Brian Weiss, a leader in his field. These people, time and time again, have the courage, for which they have to be congratulated for, but when they stand up, they are so shot down. Dr. Raymond Moody is still alive and is still somewhat actively following this research on. But in the UK specifically, Dr. Sam Parnia is a person who has continued doing this and who in his hospital has instituted certain techniques, like, for example, when a patient is rolled in on a stretcher, there is a lamp somewhere hanging because obviously the patient needs to be highly visible. But at the top of this lamp, he has placed something, let's say a playing card, which you can only see if you were with eyes at the top of the ceiling. And he has done this throughout his hospital, and he's also enlisted the help of fellow-minded professionals who have done this in other hospitals. So when patients of him come to him with stories of, like, well, I was floating outside of my body, he will ask, like, well, where were you? Oh, did you see anything? And they will describe things which he has purposely placed there, which only he and a very few select people know. Nobody, you know, like, nobody who's wheeled in an ambulance, no medical emergency worker is going to say, oh, by the way, I know you're dying, but here's something you need to know to push a joke on Dr. Parnia when you come out of it. It doesn't work like that. So when he wrote his book, his latest book, he came on a UK television, and you can still see the skepticism. It's like, okay, we cannot, this guy is too important. This guy cannot be denied access to front stage. We need to let him talk, but at the same time, we need to present it in a way that either makes it appear as if, well, it's not really the full evidence. It might be something, but we do not know what it is. So we're trying to explain it away rather than accept the obvious, or we will ridicule him. And so all of these defense mechanisms exist within the Western world. And it is interesting that we keep doing it. And it kind of ties it back to the first question, I think, which was at the beginning of the show, which is like, you know, like, is it incompatible with the Christian mind frame? And I think a lot of people simply refuse to listen to it because they fear that if it's unchristian, then it is bad. And within a scientific view, it's all made up. So whether it's a near-death experience or UFO abduction or reincarnation, it's great to have these individual stories of the 11 or the 7-year-old who's doing it, but let's just leave it at that.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we have to remember is that the great beauty of Christian teaching is the understanding that the soul is eternal and that we live forever. And using that basic principle of Christianity, There's nothing here in these ideas of reincarnating that really opposes any of that. In fact, reincarnation actually celebrates this idea of the soul being eternal, doesn't it? And the soul being able to simply take on flesh anytime it feels like it or needs to. So there's really nothing in this idea of the soul as eternal that does anything but support the real teachings and tenets of Christianity.
And that's definitely, I think, I mean, again, it's an all universal for the Western mind. It's either reincarnation or ascension or going to God and seeing, you know, being welcomed by Saint Peter and or Jesus. But when you go into a Hindu Buddhist mythology or religion, Dr. Amit Goswami is one of those people. He's one of my all-time heroes because he has linked all of these religious concepts and married them to quantum physics. And when he starts to explain the idea of the Buddhist point of view of reincarnation, it is this, that even if you have lived a beautiful life and have done everything right, if you could go back to the source, there are billions of other souls out there who are saying, no, we're still enjoying our lifetime, and we're going to keep doing this playing time thing. And so his point of view is like, you know, like these souls kind of go, okay, well, you know, okay, we are going to go back into another body and enjoy ourselves or help mankind or do this thing or do that thing. And I think that and universe kind of like makes it also apparent that I think a lot of the things to do with reincarnation is to do with karma. A lot of people believe that they reincarnate because they were bad in a previous life, and now they have to come back and rectify that situation. And I think that's something which isn't made apparent so much by the Dr. Brian Weisses and everybody else who's involved with it. But I think it is important as to why people in the Western world are prudent, if not withholding, from embracing this concept that they might have lived before. Because in their frame of mind, the very first thing which they believe reincarnation is all about is that they have been bad boys or girls in a previous life and now they have to do better.
Well, for me, the true driving force for my passion about reincarnation is relationships. It's what you were talking about earlier with the spirit family. And the one thing that I have seen in my own life over and over again is that there are people in my life, some who have been here all along and some who have shown up recently, who I know immediately upon meeting them that this person is a member of my family. What understanding this concept of soul family and spirit family of people who I have been with over and over again, and I'm so comfortable with and know so well and can work with so well and deal with so well, and who are, you know, that family has nothing to do with DNA or genetics. It really is an essence of the spirit. And I believe with all my heart from my own experiences and my own research that we do reincarnate in groups. And that is something that I think is extremely beautiful. And that goes way beyond these ideas of karma. I think that that's such a limiting point of view. I think that kind of goes back to the coming back as a bug or a, you know, a rodent or whatever. I just that just doesn't work for me. I just think that we are far more exalted in our being than that. And I think that we're far more exalted in our being as humans than to be on this, you know, sad sort of cycle of I was a bad boy or a bad girl and I have to come back and fix it. Do I believe that you know, that there, you know, in the idea of karma? Of course. But I think in terms of the bigger picture of who we are in our lives, it's so much more beautiful and more expansive than that. And I prefer to look at it, and it has certainly been my experience over and over again, that we come back to work together. We come back to accomplish things together. We come back to help each other. And yes, sometimes we come back to, you know, to play a role in each other's lives, to push somebody maybe into a type of learning or a direction. But that's what part of what family does as well. But certainly, you know, one of the things that you and I have experienced in our time together is this extraordinary depth of connection that just feels completely and utterly eternal. And that's where the time returns comes in. And for me, that is really the essence of understanding reincarnation, is understanding how long and how eternally we have all loved each other and been together, whether it's as lovers or parents or, you know, brother, sister, any of those things. And I think in many cases, we've been all and more to each other.
I mean, tying it back to where does that leave us with reincarnation? Because at the same time, we have drunk from the waters of memory to forget when we incarnate, and then we kind of like realize that we can actually tap into these previous existences through hypnosis. So the obvious question would be kind of like, you know, should we do that? At the same time, it's tied in with the lesson which you voiced, which is it's not to do with the ego. And I think that if you do focus on the ego, basically you're using hypnosis as a means of writing your own history, so to speak, which is great, but to some extent, which would make it boring. And I go back to the Frontier Symposium, Brother and Sister, whereby he had to use the hardcore history of, like, you know, what was his name, where did he die, where did he live, to find his sister and find that she was alive. And this is impossible for me to convey in the depth, because you have to see it to experience it. But when you see those two together, the wealth and richness which they have become better persons as a result of that, because they have a bond which really extends beyond time. He has the experience of today's life. He has a happy family, a loving wife, a beautiful career, but at the same time he has a sister from a previous life who's still alive, and whose final few days on this planet, because she's in her 80s, all of a sudden have become enriched, empowered. She feels younger. She is younger. She at the age of 80, she went on stage in front of 400 people, and even though her daughter did most of the talking, you could see that this woman, was young at heart. She had been revitalized by this, and she had, at some point, whenever she has to die, this experience will be so powerful for her, and it's both the experiencing part and the knowledge part. So as a hypnotherapist who's done that, if anybody wants to experience reincarnation therapy, how do you go about that, this careful balance of the two, of not focusing on Cleopatra or Marie Antoinette, but at the same time getting the life lessons?
Well, it's all about, first of all, finding the right therapist. It's about finding someone who can really help you through this. And you know what? And some of the great teachers like Dick Sutphin are out there still doing this kind of work. And, you know, you can go to their websites. I think Brian Weiss, I'm guessing that, I think it's brianweiss.com. I think he has some information there for therapists that you can go to. I'm sure that on Dick Sutphin's site, he's got some information. The internet is full of resources right now. I'll try to find some and get some up there on our website for you. But you know what? It's a due diligence thing. If you want to do this, get yourself with someone who really knows what they're doing. Get yourself with someone who's done a lot of regressions and knows how to deal with you. Because I'll tell you something else. As someone who has been on both sides of the past life therapist couch, you can sometimes find yourself in some pretty hairy situations in your regressions. You know, I have regressed people who were in the middle of war zones and, being hacked at or watching somebody be hacked and been through extremely traumatic things. So you want to make sure that if you find yourself in a very vulnerable place in hypnosis, that you are with a professional who really knows how to deal with that, how to move you through it, how to get you to the lesson, how to move you above the pain of it, so that it is truly a therapeutic process. Don't play with this stuff, I think is what I'm saying. Don't do it just because you think it's going to be fun. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but if you're going to even do it just for recreation, do it with somebody who knows what they're doing, just in case you encounter a circumstance somewhere in your memory that is traumatic or, unexpected. So just do your diligence, interview your therapist, get recommendations, talk to people who have had it, go on discussion forums online and find people who have been through it and see who they like, and check out professionals like Brian Weiss and Dick Sepfin and see what they're referring people to.
And like anything else, you know, don't settle for the first one available. There are plenty of them out there, and that perfect one will be out there for you as well. Which brings us to another edition of the Spirit Revolution. Seeing its reincarnation, probably this program at some point will reincarnate into a sequel, and we will talk again about the subject of reincarnation. As always, we are available on thespiritrevolution.com, where we have all archives available of all our previous shows of the past 6 months. The BBS Radio Archive has got them all. For example, January ones are available there. And then on the spiritrevolution.com website, you also find links to iTunes, where we are also available. So in short, it's really hard to miss us.
And iTunes is free. You can download us for free on iTunes. So, stick us in your car and let us travel with you.
And until next week, this is the last edition of the Spirit Revolution of August. It's coming to the fall season, so we will continue. And from Kathleen and myself,
the truth against the world.